when Cartoon Network was no more, a lot of us got together when they were, it was like the last day that they were in the building. And I don't, God, I want to say like 200 of us, of like actors and animators and writers and everybody that made Cartoon Network, run, showed up and did like a group photo. And it was like, it was literally like graduating from high school and then coming back to like homecoming or something and seeing all these people that you love from different shows. And it was such a cool place to work, to go in there and be able to see people that were making these shows. Like it felt like college, kind of, where you didn't know who you'd meet in the lobby, like while you were getting a soda, and everybody's excited to be there. And so it was really lovely to have that goodbye when they put it all together.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Regular Show Wiki's 15th anniversary interviews. Today's guest is a voice actor who provided various voices throughout the show, such as Audrey, Trash, Scabifer, and of course, Starla. Please welcome Courtney Taylor.
Hey guys, how are you?
So we'll start from the beginning. What initially made you want to work as a voice actor, and how did you get into the industry?
Well, I didn't know that there was even such a thing, really. And I was kind of, I had always been told I should be an actor, I think, because I talk a lot. And I was a bit of a show off when I was a kid. And so my older sister was an actor. And so she was like, you can't be an actor because that's my thing. And so I didn't pursue it at all until she had kind of given it up. And I was in college, I think. And I thought it would be an easy A to just go and, take a class for a laugh. And it was not easy, but it was really challenging and fun. And so I just started taking classes. I wasn't really sure what I was thinking I would do, but I ended up at ACT's Summer Training Conservatory in San Francisco, which is, where I had been going to college and where I grew up for the most part. And I decided I was going to apply to go to a drama school in New York. And when I went in to do my audition, I had been teaching fitness classes and like boxing fitness, boxing training stuff. I had boxed when I was younger. And so I was teaching a lot of classes and going to school and waiting tables. And so my voice was a little beat, but it wasn't that different than what it is now. And I went in to do my auditions, and the guy I auditioned for just said, you have a terrible voice. You'll never do theater with that voice. You'll never be able to project to the back of a theater. And so I left, and I was really upset because I had put a lot of work into it. And like, I was kind of at that age where I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do, but I didn't like telling, people telling me that I couldn't do it. And so I went back to my voice and speech teacher at ACT, and she, this wonderful woman named Elizabeth Payne. And she said, you should maybe go to a, like a commercial voice acting class and see. And I didn't know what that was, but I thought it sounded intriguing. And so I went, and the minute I got behind the mic, I was like, oh, this is like so much fun. I can be as, I can tell stories and be creative, but I also don't have people like, staring at me. And so it helped me channel all of the stuff that I loved doing without the pressure of worrying about how I looked or, and so I just, yeah, I loved it. And so I just started taking classes, and then I, bugged an agent to sign me for months, and he finally did. And I booked my first commercial audition that I went out on. And so it just kind of started from there. And then I did a lot of commercials, and then I started doing, video games, and then finally animation was kind of the last, hurdle.
So that, how did Regular Show come along then?
I had done a pilot for Cartoon Network that didn't end up going. And then I got the sides. I just auditioned. I auditioned for the episode where we meet Starla, and she's working at the retail shop. And I auditioned for the other clerk at Starla, and I think I did like a more normal voice for Starla, and then thought I would do something a little more grating, because the other clerk had such few lines, and so I threw that in the mix, and then I got the call that they were gonna hire me for it, but they wanted it in reverse. They wanted Starla to have the really annoying voice, and then I heard Muscle Man, and I understood why.
So originally, Starla could have just had like your regular voice.
Yeah, I think I just played her like, hey guys, I know that guy. And the other girl was like, ew, that guy, ugh, no, she was way more like this. And so, yeah, but they flipped it. And it was funny because I do think that I didn't know what Muscle Man sounded like. I don't think the show was out yet, or at least I hadn't. I mean, I had seen auditions come through for Rigby and the other characters, but I think I auditioned for Rigby actually. But I didn't know what Muscle Man sounded like. So it turned out to be Kismet, I think.
So, how would you kind of define Starla as a character? And was there any way you'd sort of get into character?
Yeah, I mean, I think she is someone who has I can totally relate to her. She like puts on a badass face, but she's tender on the inside. And I think, she's kind of stuck in that age where you really are expecting. She has a lot of private logic, right? So she expects that people are going to just know how she's feeling. And she doesn't have I guess now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, this is kind of a recurring theme in a lot of the characters I play that they have big feelings but don't really know how to control them or channel them. But I think, she has been surrounded, her family looks like her, so she's, to her mind, she's the prettiest and the coolest. She doesn't have context, I think, outside of that. And Muscle Man worships her, so nobody tells her no. So she acts accordingly.
And I think most of the regular show fandom would agree with me in saying that Muscle Man and Starla's relationship is probably one of the healthiest relationships we see in the show. Because everyone on the outside looks at it kind of with disgust and this prejudice because of how they look. But when you watch them together, it's true love. And I think Mordecai says at one point, "Oh, look at them, they're made for each other."
Truly, I mean, they are very much, not aware that maybe they don't fit into the, more accepted versions of beauty in our society. And, but I love that. I think there is, a lock for every key. And that's, regardless of the externals, that's really what you want in life, right? Even if everybody has their difficulties, their quirks. You want to find somebody who understands those things about you and still loves you, hopefully sort of unconditionally. Yeah, I think that it has a nice progression. And yeah, you just want somebody who's going to accept you at your worst. And I love that, Mitch still loves her even when she's being a brat. And I can totally relate to that.
So obviously, with you being Starla is Muscle Man's girlfriend, later wife. We have to talk about Sam Marion. What was it like working with him, with you two being in, with both your characters being in a relationship?
I think Sam's like the secret weapon of the show. I mean, I don't think it's secret anymore, but like he is an amazing. He was born to play those three characters that, those three main. That's a pretty, considering that he is not a professional voice actor in the sense that like that's not his main gig, the fact that he carries three main characters and can shift so seamlessly back and forth between them. I was shocked to watch it. I mean, he reminds me of the actors that I know that have been doing this for years and years and years and can just go back and forth from, like Mickey Mouse to Call of Duty to, all of these different things. They can just bounce around and it's literally, they're just all living, all these characters are living very, very comfortably in their heads. And like it's like an apartment building, and they can just open the front door at any time, and it doesn't matter if they just shut one door and the other one opens instantly. So, yeah, I mean, I think he was just kind of born to do those characters, and it's he's he's a pretty low-key dude, so it is really fun to watch him. He's kind of quiet, and when we've done conventions and stuff together, he's just kind of sitting there chilling. He's not showing off, he's not running around, he's not being boisterous. And then it's like Muscle Man just busts out of him, and to see the physical placement of where they live in his body, where he can just go back and like to watch him standing at the mic and then watch it really is a great reminder as an actor that, especially as a voice actor, that so many of these characters really live in the physicality, and that is such an instant way to get to those characters. It's either through a key phrase, that they say, his probably being like, my mom. But to see that, like, that is such a great, like, I definitely came home and was like, oh, I need to start like looking at that as another tool for our toolbox, and to watch it so seamlessly happen in real time. Because a lot of the times he's talking to himself, and so it was a great reminder of what a potent tool that is. And my favorite part of working with him is when we get to make out, because he always seems a little horrified right up until the point that it happens. Then he just goes for it. And everybody hates it. Like we have, I say we did record, in a group. And so it was always really fun to what like try and go for it so much that the, director, Chris Salter Zimmerman, would be like, cut, 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 enough, enough. And everyone's like, oh God. We're both like, because we do it, like I usually start and then he will follow, or vice, we don't do it at the same time for clarity, obviously, for tracks. And so the fact that they make it's disgusting separate, and it's disgusting when they put it together. So I think it works really well.
And that kind of translates itself into the show as well.
Yeah, and like to be able to see everyone behind the glass being like, oh, you're doing it right.
Another character which you briefly played was Rigby's mom. What was the kind of bond like with Bill Salyers?
Bill and I actually met prior to regular show. We did an episode of a show called iCarly together, and so we met on set. We played judges for an episode about, it was kind of a mixture of American Idol and Iron Chef. And so there were three judges judging chefs making, a chef made spaghetti tacos. And so we met on set. We spent a couple of days together, and he actually was asking me questions about voice acting because he was trying to kind of break in. And so I was like, oh, like here's some advice, and we're chatting away about it. And then we wrapped the episode, and then I didn't see him again, because he comes from like a theater on camera background, and I pretty much for the most part do just voice acting. And the next time I saw him was when I was walking in to do Starla, and I was like, oh, I guess the voice acting thing's going pretty well for you, actually, because you're the lead on this show. So, and he was like, thank you so much for all the advice. I'm like, guess it worked, huh? And we became friends after that. And Rigby's my favorite character in the show. Because he's just such a little jerk. And I love him, and I love Rigby. I love Bill. I think he's incredibly talented. He's an amazing theater actor as well. He also does amazing, in the Spider-Man franchise, he's Doc Ock, and he is just amazingly talented and a wonderful person as well. So, I just adore him.
And you've worked on other things together as well, right?
Yeah, we did Mass Effect together. We did iCarly together. I think he did Fallout. The voice acting community is still fairly small. And so at least the one that I run in, I mean, obviously there's like anime and there's a bunch of other ways to voice act but for the kind of games that I work on, a lot of us know each other and work with each other in animation as well. So yes, he is Morden in Mass Effect 3 and did an amazing job. Yeah, I mean, I'll work with him anytime. He makes me want to actually go and do theater again, which was a very short-lived endeavor for me, but he's an amazing actor.
There was one thing that I was, because while I've been doing these interviews, I've been speaking to people who didn't just work on the show, but worked on some of the like tie-in media, like the books and the comics. And there was one person that wrote a book which was very inspired by Shakespeare. And I was like, you know, this would be a great idea for like a regular show stage play.
I would totally do
I don't know how it would work for Sam. He'd have to be like in three different places at once, but.
You know what? They could do something. They could do some like mask theater, where he just holds up one mask and kind of goes back and forth. I think there's something to that. I mean, I say whoever did that, run with it, because I would be thrilled to be part of that. And it would be wildly wacky. And even if it didn't work, I think it would work. Because so many of us do play multiple characters, it would have to be some kind of a mask situation, or you just like turned away from the audience and then turned into the character. But that happens.
Onto Starla again. Is there a favorite quote you've got from Starla that still sticks in your mind today?
I mean, I like the I don't it's not necessarily a quote, but I just love, the when she says, and I'm not going to get this exactly right, but she's like, something about like how Mitch should know what I'm thinking even when I don't say what I'm thinking, because I feel like I operate from that private logic a lot. And definitely in my relationships in the past have come from that, like, you should just know if you really loved me. Yeah, I mean, I think the whole show has incredible. One of the things I love the most is doing conventions with those guys, because oftentimes we'll be together, or a couple of tables away, and I'll be, doing my thing, and I'll just see this, oh, in the, across the, or, like, my mom. And I always am like, hand boning will save your life. And yeah, I just feel like there's so many quotable, even just like the the way that they just created these little idiosyncrasies, even the nonverbal things that people remember, is a testament to how fun and funny the show is. And honestly, I'm not like an easy laugher when I'm watching cartoons. I'm just not. And that show makes me smirk. That makes me laugh out loud. I think one of the things that I love about the show is that it uses a really similar device to, like, the comedic device of like Seinfeld, right? Where they focus on some tiny thing and that's what the whole episode is about, right? So the like, we have to, set up the chairs right so that we don't ever have to set up the chairs again, is such a great way of making the everyday common indignation or irritation or fixation that turns into something that earns it the whole episode. And That's my favorite kind of humor, actually, is that earnestness around something that doesn't really seem like it should matter.
You were talking about conventions and stuff. I don't know if you can tell. I'm based in the UK.
I thought you were from Jersey, but yes, no. Yes, I can tell you're mom's English.
So obviously for me it's more difficult to go out to those conventions, but it's on my bucket list. Like I'd love to go out there and just see all of you guys together in one room one day.
Hey man, let you know MCM Expo and those guys. I mean, I'll happily come. I love my mom's English, so I love coming to the homeland, and I know those guys would too. So you can always ask conventions to bring out a group, and hopefully they're into it, because I love traveling that way as well. I think it's a better experience for the fans when they can kind of get everybody. And the fun thing is that when you get the regular show crew, you also get people who have worked on Star Wars together, people who have worked on Mass Effect together. There's a lot of subgroups or Venn diagram circles that come together. And so I think it makes overall a better experience for the fans, and it's a lot, it's very fun for us as well.
So you've spoken about how with regular show, obviously you were all recording that like in one room. How did that kind of differ from your work on not just other shows, but other media?
Traditionally, before the pandemic, most animated shows were done in the same with a group cast in the same room. And that is my favorite way to work, because it's the timing, the riffing off the energy and the ad libs and the things that don't get picked up by the mic. The things that happen the moment before you start rolling definitely inform some of the general humor. But in video games, we generally work alone in a booth by ourselves. And so I think I understand why each medium has a different way of doing it. But I think that for humor, there's never anything funnier than when you get a cast of voice actors together to do the thing. So whenever possible, I would love to do that. It's great for video games. I mean, I definitely have a vivid imagination, and so it's okay, because I usually have kind of a movie going in my head of how it's going, so I can at least inform my own lines. But it is difficult, because in video games, we also generally don't get the script until if at all, until the night before. So you are doing what I call kind of a standing long jump, in that you're trying to make these substitutions or context as fast as you can, where getting to read the whole script, which often happens with animation, not always, but if you're a regular person, regular cast member, you get the information, so you can, it's I think easier to give informed options for the editor to make things happen. And again, knowing what Sam Marin sounds like while he's kissing also inform, I can make the timing easier. I can make it, I can go, oh, I just heard him do that. Great. I'll also respond to that. So it's a little more traditional acting in that way.
So, what are some of your favorite memories of working on regular show?
Favorite memories. Well, meeting Mark Hamill, which I talk about in a lot of my interviews, was pretty cool. Because I got to sit next to him. And so that was really fun, trying to keep my cool sitting next to him, because he's been a huge part of my entire life. I think like being able to like let little kid me know that I was going to get to sit next to him in a room, like would have, I wish I could time travel back and be like, hey, that guy you think is so cute, sitting right there. So meeting JG was really cool, because I kind of had a preconceived notion about the kind of, like, I thought, oh, this is going to be like, it seemed like kind of a, these guys are probably total stoners that write this show, like, and they're not. I mean, like, I thought it was going to be like the dude and Matthew McConaughey. And they, I mean, he's just an amazing, fun, funny guy who has such a great eye for detail and such a sort of, his sense of humor is just so appealing to me. And he's got this like little mischievous streak to him that is, it's just really appealing. And I guess working with John Saigon, late great John Saigon, was really amazing. Getting to see people come in for the show, getting to work with Roger Craig Smith, and try and steal some of the stuff that he does because he's amazing. His sense of humor, he's just so fast. He's just so fast and so funny. I mean, everything was, and then also getting to meet Minty and Janie and, make friends with them and just, yeah, just kind of see how the sausage gets made, right? And how they brought people in. And then I was really lucky because one of the producers on regular shows, Toby Jones, and I ended up working with Toby on OKKO, Let's Be Heroes. So the show is definitely something that was a huge gift. It also gave me the experience of being able to come in and play utility characters because they would throw small things at me a lot, and it was like the first time that I was like, oh, I gotta like be on my toe. It was my first experience with that. So I think it really taught me, and also stealing from all of these incredibly talented people, but made me a better actor. And then also getting to work, it was very sweet. The woman who really gave me like my first AAA game role was the director, Chris Salter Zimmerman. Getting to work with her on the, regularly was such a gift. She's incredibly talented and a dear friend. She also gave me my first motion capture role, doing motion capture for video games, a lot of firsts with her. So it was it's the gift that keeps on giving, honestly. I'm always thrilled to see any of these people in out in the wild. It's been a really special experience for, a long time.
Just last night, I was rewatching one of the Streamily reunions that you did, and it was the one with Chris. And that suddenly gave me a very different view of what it's like to be a voice actor. Because obviously, in the final show and what everybody sees, you don't hear like Chris's direction at all. So seeing that was like. And when you guys did the scene was like a really cool experience. It was like we were all in that room with you guys.
I mean, and she's royalty, I will say, like they made amazing choices with the people that they brought in for this show. She started working at like Hanna-Barbera, in the 70s or 80s. Like she's been doing this forever, and she does video games and she does animation and stuff. So, and it's not easy to corral, 8 voice actors. We all talk a lot. We're all trying to one up each other with jokes and things like that. So it is to have that be your circus and your monkeys. It's a tall task, and she's amazing.
So, do you have a favorite episode that you might have worked on, or that you did work on, or that you didn't?
I mean, I think I mean I love the Hambonin. When they, end up on the moon. I loved, Excellent. I loved, I mean, I definitely loved, obviously, the one where Starla gets introduced. I also got to play Trash and Scabatha in the flying car. And as a, I was a punk rock kid, so I was extremely pleased about that, seeing their artwork. I mean, there's so many good ones, but I think I can pick out little bits in every episode that I really love. Like just even like the fact that they in the hand boning one, that they had like just that phrase just sticks in. Like I probably will never forget that phrase. There's an episode, I think it's the one where they need to get tickets to the concert and for Fist Pump, and they have Lover Boy, this band from like the 80s, as the song. You know, there's just so many like cool little touches that just make me giggle. But just is a testament to, you know, to Sean and JG and everybody else that's working on the show, Minty, all the writers, Michelle. They just seem like they have this really great, that they all mesh and that their humor really works. So we're spoiled for choice, really.
I definitely think that's one of the most appealing things about regular show is how, I mean, I'm sure most media is very collaborative, but it really shows with regular show. And even like when the show was on, I used to love seeing people post online just like pictures of them with the rest of the crew out eating lunch. And it's like you can tell how much of a it makes everybody feel more like people and not just names on a screen.
And I will say that when Cartoon Network was no more, we a lot of us got together when they were, it was like the last day that they were in the building. And God, I want to say like 200 of us, of like actors and animators and writers and everybody that made Cartoon Network, you know, run. Showed up and did like a group photo, and it was literally like graduating from high school and then coming back to like homecoming or something, and seeing all these people that you love from different shows. And it was such a cool place to work, to go in there and be able to see, you know, like people that were making these shows, like Steven Universe and Over the Garden Wall, and all of the randomly meeting people in the lobby, where you were just like, oh, you make that show? Oh, cool, you know. Yeah, it was just this like almost like a it felt like college kind of, where you didn't know who you'd meet in the lobby like while you were getting a soda, and everybody's excited to be there. And so it was really lovely to have that goodbye when they put it all together. And I also want to just say, because I want to make sure that I get this in here, just having touched on it briefly, that the people who did the music for Regular Show, every episode is so good. It's so good. So I don't have their names in my head right now, but I just want to say that the music department for that show, incredible. Both from the selection of pre-existing stuff and the stuff that they made, and the, you know, all of the nods to like 80s metal. And it just, I also loved seeing how they got around like standards and practices with like swearing and stuff like that, like, you know, what the H is this S, and you know, don't call me a hole. So whoever was doing that as well, I just love them for that, because there was just a lot of really funny things when I look back on working on that show.
And in regards to the soundtrack, I'd love for them to one day officially give us a release of it so we can listen to
Yeah.
just all the background music because it's always been so cool.
Give us the music, and also, like, I wish that they would, and I don't know, maybe they did this when it just not when I was there, but like behind the scenes stuff, because it is so funny. And they had so many great people work on the show. So I don't know if it's out there. I haven't looked for it. But yeah, I mean, that's some good BTS B-roll stuff.
There's like little bits of it. I know that there's a few things that people just filmed on their phones that they post on like Instagram. On one of the DVDs, there's just a silent video of Sam and we can't hear anything of what he's recording, but it's just Sam in the booth.
I'll ask. I'll hit up JG and be like, "What can I?" Because I'm pretty sure I know I've videoed some of Sam. That totally rings a bell. I mean, it's been obviously a while, but yeah, I'll see if I have something. Maybe on one of my old phones, because I never throw them away or get rid of them. So it's out there.
Do you have a favorite character to have played other than Starla? You've played many different characters throughout the show.
I think it was mostly, I mean, I did love, you know, Trash and Scabatha, like I said, but I think it was really the idea of just getting in there and being like, because it's not like they're giving us a, you know, you get the script and you're like, okay, I'm playing these three characters, but you don't know how they're going to want it. And so you kind of go in and you're like, it just makes you like prep a few different ways to do things so that you have a few things in your back pocket and you kind of hope that that one of those will work. And if they don't, that you have to be loose enough to kind of be able to ratchet something up and down, like age or size or, you know, attitude in the moment. And it is kind of clicking a dial and being like, how about this? How about this? So trusting yourself and trusting the director to be able to guide you to that spot and then keep you in the pocket, especially if it's something that you, I mean, I've definitely pulled out some characters where I was like, oh, I mean, this is just for a few lines, but this is not a character that like I'm making this up on the spot. And so if that character starts off in the beginning and then we see her in the end, to keep it consistent, because you might have to go 14 pages before you have another line with her. So to have that consistency and also trust that you're going to come up with something that they like and they're going to keep you in that pocket it's a great exercise as an actor.
Another character which you played, just a very minor role, went viral a few years ago, being the angry lady from Take the Cake.
What? It did?
It was when all the things about like angry Karens was going around on the internet. And that has been like regular show predicted Karens.
Really?
That gained quite a bit of traction for being the woman who tried to cut Mordecai and Rigby with a cake cutter.
I had no idea. I was a Karen before Karens were not cool. I'll have to go and revisit that one because I was not aware that went into the zeitgeist of our questionable societal trends.
So what would you say are your main inspirations for voice acting?
That's a good question. It's funny. When I first moved to Los Angeles, I was so passionate about doing this that I was broke. And I was in class with a few people and we decided to make our own like workout group so that we could get better. And I don't know how I did this. I don't even know how I would have had his contact information. But so we had access to a recording studio after hours that we used, and we would go in there, which is great because it was like eight people that didn't know how to voice act very well, I think, at the time. But we were like trying to teach each other and like just incorporate notes and things that we were reading and doing in class. Somehow I got a hold of Hank Azaria, and I don't know, but I asked him to come in, and he did. Like, he came to this, like, he didn't know us. He showed up to this recording studio and sat there and talked to, I think, like 10 of us about his process and about what, like, how he got into things and what he does. And so I'm not like a mimic or an impressionist like he is, but watching him work and watching him talk about his process was super inspiring to me. And I think he really like poured gas on the fire for me. So he was a big Inspiration. And it's funny because I've never actually really thought about that. That question just sort of jogged that memory. And then I think, inspiration wise, there's so many actors out there that I think are good, really great, that I'm inspired to do better by. I mean, there's a lot of Hannah Waddingham is amazing and makes me want to sing and dance and have more expansive characters. There's a lot of people within, Kari Wahlgren is so facile. And it's amazing to watch her work because she's a pretty low key person in person. And then she kind of kind of turns into a totally different beast behind the mic. And that's really inspiring. My mom has inspired a lot of characters. But really, I love watching people work and then getting juiced. I also love watching people I teach sometimes, I coach sometimes, and watching people bring what they've got to the party, whether or not they've been doing this for a week or a lifetime. Just being inspired by getting to really scrutinize and study people. I take inspiration from people I meet at the vet, my family members. There's not really been anybody who I was like, oh, I want to be Nancy Cartwright or anything, because I didn't know her when I started. But I mean, obviously the body of work is amazing. So pick a day and I'm inspired by someone new.
Do you have any advice for people who want to work as a voice actor?
I think everybody says this, but I can't underscore enough that, making sure that you're in class. There are so many things that are going to help that, this is such a specialized thing that we do. And I get a lot of like, oh, it's just talking, but you can't jump into a booth and do a 4-hour video game session without knowing what you're doing. And you might get a job or a couple of jobs based on, what your voice sounds like, but you're not going to be able to carve a career out unless you really do have a lot of tools in your toolbox. So everything from speed reading to public speaking to pharmacy school could to, any of these things could help you in your craft, because being in the armed forces is going to help you. There's always something in your life that you can draw upon that you've done that's going to help you do the thing, and you might be able to like coast on that. Maybe you're a singer, maybe you're in the armed forces, maybe, and they can slot you into something like Call of Duty, with fairly little experience. You might be kind of a one-trick pony, but I think it's so important for longevity, and also to be able to go in and be a collaborator in the booth instead of having someone push you in the direction that they want you to go. Ideally, you want to walk in and be a collaborator, right? You want to bring stuff to the party, and the alchemy happens when the director and the writers and you all get together as a team and make something really great. So if you can sing, if you can, are facile with improv, if you need to know how to break down a scene, you need to understand character arc, you need to understand things like moment before and intentions. So all of the traditional acting and then some is going to help you. I reverse engineered my career as I went along. I did not have a, long period of time that I studied acting. But that was also at the time that I got into it. I think it was a little bit more flexible. Now the competition is very steep, so or stiff. And so I think if you're starting off, you want to have an embarrassment of riches to draw upon. So that when you walk in, people are like, whoa, who is this person? As opposed to, okay, get this person through this and then find somebody who, has more experience. Yeah, always be studying. I'm always studying. I'm always some of the most established people that you enjoy their performances are working with dialect coaches, are continuing to, just because you don't see the seams of it doesn't mean that they're not working. So don't presume that this is just everybody just shows up and, oh my God, they know how to do this, because a lot of work goes into the final product that you see.
That's great. And just before we start to wrap up, is there anything that's coming up or anything that you've been working on that you'd like to promote?
Sure. Well, I'm actually directing on a game right now, which I can't say, but we just obviously what can I say? Avowed came out. I did some directing on that video game, which was a lot of fun with Obsidian, and I have season three of Blood of Zeus on Netflix, the third season for that show. Trying to think of anything else I could talk about right now. Just did Dark Legions, so that mobile game. I'm Wonder Woman in that, and I'm actually playing that, which is super fun. And I think that's probably everything that I can say right now, but you can always hit me up on social media on Blue Sky or Instagram, and I post on Instagram for the most part, like when I'm doing conventions. So conventions, they're happening. Not the ones in England, but we're trying. And yeah, if you want to reach out on social media, that's usually where I post everything.
And at what name can people find you on social media?
Oh yes, at Courtney Taylor LA on Instagram, and my name is spelled Courtenay, Courtney Taylor. So Courtney Taylor LA, and then Blue Sky is just at Courtney Taylor. And then YouTube. It's all just my weirdly spelled name.
Well, Courtney, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a really fun conversation and makes me want to go. I'm gonna go watch some more regular show.
Thank you once again to Courtney Taylor for joining us for this interview. Once again, make sure you follow her on social media at Courtney Taylor LA if you're interested in finding out more about her latest work and upcoming appearances. All links will be available in the description. Our next interview will be with Matt Price, regular show's head writer who worked on almost every episode of the series, and also provided the voice of Quips, and will be coming out in 2 weeks. With next week being the 15th anniversary of the show, we will instead have a special episode of the podcast hosted by the full team behind the wiki, reflecting on the show as a fandom. On our YouTube channel, we will also have a special video to commemorate the anniversary. In the meantime, here's a preview for our Matt Price interview.
At Comic-Con, I met, there are obviously a bunch of kids dressed up like Mordecai and Rigby and Skips and you get a couple Eileens in there, But one guy came up to me and he goes, "Hey, Zingo." And I was like, "Oh my gosh." And he was dressed as Quips and I almost passed out. I was like, that's how this show is. It's like, it goes so deep that there's some random guy out there who dressed up like Quips. Pretty fantastic.